This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Newspapers come in two sizes, broadsheets like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, which you might find folded next to the orange juice, and the tabloid, much easier to read on the bus or the subway, and which tend to focus more on sports and gossip. Over the decades, tabloid came to describe a style of journalism, which now includes everything from the National Enquirer to glossy magazines like Us Weekly and In Touch that also feed the national passion for celebrity scandal. Mostly, Talk of the Nation is concerned with broadsheet topics. Today, we're talking tabloids. We'll write an obit for the Weekly World News and go inside a celebrity news mag as well with a former writer for the Globe. Later in the hour, the Wiggles versus the pediatricians and the running controversy over the electronic babysitter. But first, let's gossip. Do you read about alien babies or celebrity babies in the checkout line? Were you a Weekly World News devotee? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org, or you can comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with Bob Lind, who interrupted his career as a singer-songwriter to spend 10 years at the Weekly World News. He's back in music now, but here to reminisce about the glory days of the world's only reliable newspaper. He joins us from Echo Beach Studios in Jupiter, Florida. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hey, Neil, thank you. WNN goes mainstream. I can't believe it. It's great. We dreamed of this moment.
Now, how on earth did you go from the elusive butterfly to elusive Elvis?
Well, that's a very good question. I was very mad at the music business at the time, and I was writing prose. A friend of mine said, listen, he said, you ought to write for the tabs, you know, because at the time I was writing prose. I was writing short stories and novels, and none of which I was getting paid for. He said, the money's great. And I said, I hate all that. And yeah, let me correct one thing about Weekly World News. We were not celebrity.
Oh, no. It became that way later, yeah.
Yeah, well, the point is that I, you know, I said, look, I have no interest in that. Who's getting fat? Who's screwing who? That's mean-spirited, and I don't like it, never have, and still don't. He said, no. He said, there's papers like The Sun. The Sun was different then. Mm-hmm. The Sun was a rival thing. And Weekly World News, you just sit around and make up stories all day, and they pay you handsomely. You know, and I had just gotten a short story published in the Crescent Review, and I'd worked months over it, line by line, making sure that every word was right, and they paid me in copies. And now, you know, I'd write three of these things a day, and they'd pay me handsomely. You know, 50 grand was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
You know, songwriting royalties has always been my main source of income. But believe me, that was a nice little boost.
And was this fun work, making up news?
I cannot begin to tell you how much fun it was, how beautiful it was. And what's more, the people that I worked with, how creative they were and brilliant and bright. You know, people like Sal Ibone and Eddie and Derek Klontz and Lesky Pinson, who was a wild man, and Dick Culpa. These people, I mean, you know, I've known a lot of creative people in being in the music business and in the arts, period. But I'll tell you something, these people were great to work with. And if you talk about fun, there are days when I would leave that newsroom, Neil, and I would, my face would hurt and my stomach would hurt from laughing, just laughing all day. Because that's the kind of newsroom it was. It was very, all the stories were very communal.
And what was your favorite story that you wrote?
Well, you know, it's hard to remember which ones I wrote. I was trying to think of that because I knew I'd be asked it. Which ones I wrote and which ones were sort of a collective thing. I'll tell you one of the most memorable stories I wrote. I was writing at that time a lot of negative stories. The world's going to end. You know, this horrible virus is going to break out. So the stuff that Sal Ibone used to call recreational terror. You know, people, things that the reader could read and get excited and worked up about, because predominantly we were entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, let me write something positive. So Eddie assigned me a story, or I might have even thought it up, of this peasant woman somewhere in some small town in Mexico, a little village, who space aliens were giving her recipes, and she was doing these herbal medicines that were curing cancer and heart disease. And I said, oh man, that is so positive, that's so great, until about 2 weeks after the paper came out, and I got this heartbreaking letter from this woman who said, Oh, please give me Lupe's address. My uncle is dying of cancer, and I started to realize, you know, this carries a little too much import, you know. And so after that, I was sort of careful about what I agreed to write and what I didn't.
Mm. You're credited with the headline, Space Aliens Ate My Laundry.
You know, I don't think that really, I'm glad that was, but I don't think it was mine. It's hard to remember. What we did is, if it ran the first time and it was successful, we got a lot of letters, then we would repeat it. Somebody else's laundry would be devoured by vomiting space aliens. And, you know, I do happen to remember a story that I wrote. It was, you know, two psychics' heads explode. See, what happened is we ran this story about a famed psychic. And incidentally, everybody we made up was famed or noted.
Sometimes baffled.
Those are the scientists.
Uh-huh, baffled
the scientists. Were always baffled. Yeah, exactly. We had a whole academy of baffled scientists. But, you know, the story of a famed psychic's head explodes was a popular story for us. So I got to write the follow-up. The two psychics got into a sort of psychic duel, you know. They were in so who could come up with the most concrete predictions, and they concentrated so hard. And we had sort of kind of this half-assed medical background for it, you know, that things can happen in the brain and there's electrical circuits in there. Mm-hmm. And we just took it the next level, and they concentrated so hard that both their heads exploded. and Dick Culpa did a great thing with, you know, the neck and, you know, his neck with a mm-hmm. bunch of mush coming at the other end of it, you know, to people.
We're talking about tabloids. Our guest at the moment is Bob Lind, a singer-songwriter who worked 10 years for the Weekly World News, which is about to go belly up. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Peter joins us on the line. Peter in Staunton, Wisconsin.
Hi, Peter.
Good day. I have kind of a problem because I've always relied on the endorsement of the space aliens.
Yeah.
Who I would vote for president.
Yeah, he was a fickle guy, wasn't he?
Pardon me?
He was a fickle guy, wasn't he? He backed Perot for a while, then he switched over to I can't remember who it was then. You know, Clinton, and, you know, he was all over that space alien. Yeah. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Well, what am I going to do now, though? I mean,
yeah, it's tough, man. I'm really...
Have the aliens migrated online, perhaps?
You know, I really don't know I haven't been involved with Weekly World News in probably, well, I don't know. Let me count the ways. Probably 8 years or so.
Well, you know, I keep on making endorsements so I know what to do with the next election because without it, I'm lost.
Somebody will pick up the slack.
Thanks very much for the call, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can go now to, this is Laura. Laura's with us from Grants Pass in Oregon.
Hi. I was just telling your screener that's one of our favorite things to do in the post office when we're sorting mail is to share the headlines with each other.
Yeah, and good.
It'll be sorely missed.
Aw. Yeah.
I'm sorry your day will be a little less filled with laughter.
Okay. And news, and important current
That's
events.
That's right.
And news.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Laura. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Michael. Michael with us from Hickory, North Carolina.
Michael.
Hey, I just wanted to share basically what I consider the greatest headline of all time. It takes a little setup, though, because it was based on two previous stories in the Weekly World News, one about the shaved ape baby and the other about Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden being gay and getting married. And that is basically Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden adopt shaved ape baby.
Yeah.
And that's the only time I've ever bought one of the tabloids, but I bought it for that cover. It's the greatest headline I've ever seen.
Yeah, oh, well, good. You're richer for it, I might add.
Michael, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's talk with Gene. Gene from Cape Cod in Massachusetts.
Hi, Gene.
Hi.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I just want to say, well, first of all, it's great to know that people were really making them up and they weren't serious. I always wondered about that. I love the stories.
Some were, I should say. Some were.
Some were true?
Yes, some were true. We actually interviewed some people. Yes.
It was always hard to tell because you always had a lot of people that kind of looked vaguely alike with different mustaches and beards on that were experts.
Oh, you're on to us.
Right. Yeah. Investigative reporter there.
My favorite story, and I actually saved this one, was aliens molested my weed whacker and raped my electric broom.
I guess that was one of the true ones.
Yeah, that of course. You insult me here.
Fantastic. And I'm sorry it's going belly up because it was so much fun and it didn't put anybody else down. It was just fun, and thank you for all the fun stories you gave us.
That's a good observation, Gene, that we were purely entertainment, you know, and we wrote in such a way, or we were trained to write in such a way, as to, you know, not, we didn't write comedy. You know, we weren't like The Onion, which is dazzling publication. It's the funniest paper or publication anywhere in America. But we were taught to write the news, write it straight. And in fact, the wilder the story, the straighter the approach, and the more exact the style had to be.
Which is how, I guess, the paper got into trouble after they started hiring comedy writers to write it.
I agree. The paper fell apart to me. Mm. But then, you know, any old-timer's going to say that, aren't
sure.
we?
Sure. Yeah, it was always better back in the old days.
Yeah.
Bob Lind, thanks so much for being with us, and good luck back in the music business.
Thank you very much.
Coming up from faux biz to show biz, we'll talk to an editor at Us Weekly and talk with a woman who worked for a few years at The Globe, a magazine which did investigative journalism on the death of Sonny Bono and things like that. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation. This is Elusive Butterfly from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're taking a trip inside the world of tabloids and celebrity glossies this hour. Come on, NPR listeners. We know you flip through those glossy celebramags at the dentist's. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And there are two sides to the tabloid business. There's alien babies, then actual celebrity babies. Marlies Kast was an undercover reporter at The Globe. Now she's a freelance reporter, not for the tabloids, though. Her new memoir is called Tabloid Prodigy, and she joins us today from the studios at the University of California at San Diego. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And how did you get into this business?
Oh, it's an interesting story because I actually come from a very conservative background and a long line of missionaries. But I had graduated early from college and I knew I wanted to be a writer. And at the time I sent in my application to Globe, I saw that they were hiring. And this happened to be exactly during the time of the car accident involving Princess Diana. So they wanted new young reporters and they really wanted to revamp the tabloids and try and get back their readership that they were losing as a result of the car crash with Princess Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up staying for 3 years and breaking over 200 stories while I was there.
Breaking 300 stories. You would go undercover, an attractive young woman, sometimes fitted out in a jogging suit to try to worm your way into events and find out stuff?
Yeah, I took on countless identities, claiming to be everything from a drunk wedding guest to a bridesmaid to a jogger to a shopper. I would even work out at the gym next to celebrities. And the tabloids had bought me a membership to a celebrity gym, knowing that if I jogged on the treadmill next to celebrity A or B, I would end up getting some gossip.
And unlike the Weekly World News, where we were just talking to Bob Lind, who sat around all day making up funny stories, you didn't make stuff up at The Globe.
I can only speak for myself. I know that with my stories, there was a nugget of truth in everything that I wrote, and I felt like I could justify it. And taking on these identities, I knew that I was lying and claiming to be someone that I was not, but I felt like I was doing that in an effort to get the truth.
In an effort to get the truth, did you ever wonder why you were spending so much time, trailing through porno stores or trying to sneak your way as a tipsy guest into a wedding?
Yeah, for me, I think it started out just a slow process and sort of like a drug, I became addicted. And slowly as I took on these identities, I no longer recognized my own identity. And I pushed away my friends and my family and my faith, and I didn't even know who I was anymore. And I became deeper and deeper involved in this bottomless career.
Let's see if we could get a caller on the line. This is Ed. Ed's with us from Berkeley, California.
My God, that's almost more real than what I was suggesting. I was just wondering, vis-a-vis the Rush Limbaugh thing, if you've ever penned a story that was so crazy and then it turned out to actually be true and it was like you broke the story.
The Rush Limbaugh thing, I think one of the tabloids originally broke his drug problems and then it was picked up by regular media. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean that was done in earnest, but I mean, you know, somebody saying two-headed baby from Mars, and actually they did find a two-headed baby from, not that, but you know, some, mm-hmm. other weird
I think she might have a Pulitzer if she'd found the two-headed baby from Mars. But.
No, I do understand what he is saying. We actually did at times we would predict stories and wait until they would come true, and then we would actually print those stories. For example, the wedding secrets of a certain celebrity. We knew that the bride was going to be in a silk wedding gown, or we knew that she'd be holding red roses as she came down the aisle. A lot of the celebrities, as long as it makes them look good, they wouldn't complain.
And you say, in fact, you have very little sympathy. Thanks very much for the call, Ed. Little sympathy for celebrities who, if they really cared about this, they have recourse.
Well, yeah, I felt like I did not cause the action. I was just reporting on it. And public figures had to realize that they are always under scrutiny. And there are celebrities as well that are able to avoid the limelight. You have Tom Hanks and people who, they don't have to live in Hollywood or they don't have to live in New York. And they can still act or do their passion and without having all of the drama involved. And I think another misconception is that it's always the hunter versus the hunted, where a lot of times there's a symbiotic relationship that now exists between many of the celebrities and the tabloids or the paparazzi than existed in prior years. You have Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban, who arranged the sale of their wedding photographs, or Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, who sell their baby photos to benefit charity. So a lot of times now what's happening is that the celebrities are actually working together mm-hmm. with the tabloids for their benefit.
Let's see if we get another caller in. Bill. Bill's with us from Wisconsin.
Hi.
Go ahead, Bill.
I was actually in a tabloid once. I dated someone famous in high school, and several years later, when I was out in the working world, there was a story in the National Enquirer how I was the guy that broke this person's heart.
And was that accurate?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was sort of, it was true that I dated her,
yes.
And it was true that we broke up, but I definitely didn't break her heart. We sort of, we were 19, we grew apart.
And did they ever call you to check on this story?
No, they never did, which I thought was funny because I was definitely findable because another guy that wrote a sort of a tabloidy book about her did find me, and I didn't give him any comments, and I came to regret it because I sort of missed my chance to define myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And ended up being defined by them.
Interesting point. I wonder, Marlies Kast, thanks very much for the call, Ed. Bill, excuse me. Checking stories, you did that thoroughly, do you think?
Yeah, on my stories, again, I can only speak from when I was working with the tabloids, but all of my stories, especially the high-risk stories, had to have three sources. And many of those sources had to take lie detector tests. They had to sign contracts. We had to have extra documentation, photographs to support their claims. Because if what they were saying was false, the tabloids would go down. And that's why there are not a lot of lawsuits that are against the tabloids. The tabloids are generally ridiculed for their tactics. But the whole time that I was there, there was not one lawsuit or legal letter.
Was the job fun?
Yes, I have to admit it was fun. I was young and I was naive and I loved the adrenaline involved. And I loved walking into the office and not knowing where I was going to be or what celebrity I was going to have to be following. And one day I walked into the office and my editor said, Marlies, is your passport in order? And that was the one question I always longed to hear. And next thing I knew, I was flying off to Cairo to follow a celebrity, or I'd head off to London, or just be on planes all over the United States. And for me, that was exciting. It was an adrenaline rush.
So why did you quit?
I couldn't justify what I was doing anymore. There eventually came a point where I was asked to write a headline involving a photo that I could tell that the photo had been doctored. And I took a look at it and I said, I believe that this, in my opinion, this photo has been altered and I'm afraid I can't write to this headline. And at that point, a lot of the competition was gone as well. In 1999, David Pecker came along and he bought American Media and he bought out the National Enquirer and Star and Globe. And he also formed In Touch, Hello, OK. And there was this monopoly. And overnight, I was sitting next to my enemies in the same tabloids that I was trying to scoop week after week. And suddenly here we were, friends. And for me, that really took away a lot of the excitement and the competition was gone. So I couldn't justify it any longer.
Well, Marlies Kast, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Marlies Kast is the author of the book Tabloid Prodigy. You can read about her first day on the job at The Globe at npr.org/talk. And she joins us today from the studios of the UC San Diego. If the Weekly World News and the other paper-thin mags are in tabloid journalism's past, Us Magazine and other glossies such as People are the future. Joining us now is Ken Baker. He's the West Coast editor of Us Weekly, and he joins us from his office in L.A., of course. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
And you got your start in broadsheets. You have a degree in journalism. How did you end up covering Paris Hilton?
Well, it's sort of like a lot of people. I ended up in celebrity journalism, not by intending to be in celebrity journalism, but to start off in newspapers. Went to Columbia School of Journalism and in the early 90s when really newspapers still were thriving and there was a viable business there and a lot of jobs. And really, that's how I started. And just on a whim, came out to Los Angeles, started working for People magazine in the mid-90s. And it's interesting looking back. I was just, you know, listening to your guest, and mm-hmm. he was working at a time when the old school tabloids. And I think it's very clear that we should define what tabloid means. I think that word is thrown around a lot. And I was just sitting there, and I actually, you know, Googled, and I said, what's the definition of tabloid anyway? And the only one that really fits to seem to be that fits what we're talking about here is the fifth definition I see at dictionary.com, and it says luridly or vulgarly sensational. And I think that you have to make a distinction between celebrity journalism, celebrity media, and tabloid media. And I think the big distinction is that, you know, what you're printing, do you believe it's true or not? And I think that a tabloid doesn't believe it's true and doesn't care if it's true. And a good example of that is there's a couple of magazines now that are sort of wolves in sheep's clothing, Life and Style Weekly, In Touch Weekly. They sell for $1.99, a full $1.50 cheaper than your Us Weekly or People magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And they're glossy. They look pretty. They have pretty full-color photography. They don't look like your mother's tabloids. But don't be fooled. We've been running a series of features in Us Weekly called Faux Biz, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And basically where we do is we call these magazines out because I think that they, for example, between In Touch and Life and Style, which are owned by the same German conglomerate, Bauer Publications, they had Brad Pitt and Angelina breaking up 14 times in the last 2 years. Now, I'll tell you, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie just went on a vacation to France together, had a great time. They were probably going to adopt another kid in the next year. They're not breaking up. But I think that there's a segment out there that tabloids are alive and well. The National Enquirer, The Globe, The Weekly World News, Star, the old-school tabloids, aren't doing well because they are packaged in and serving an older audience. But I just want to be clear that there is a distinction, and I think that because a lot of the glossy magazines that are out there now, there's six glossy celebrity weeklies now, where there used to be just one, People magazine, then there were two with Us Weekly and People, but now there's all these imitators, and I think it really confuses people where they don't even know what a tabloid is anymore.
Well, does My Twisted Night with Brit, the headline on the cover of your current issue, doesn't that kind of fit the description of lurid?
What that is about is a woman, Britney Spears, who has captured the imagination or the fascination of the American public because here's a woman who seemingly had it all. She had two kids. She had a great career. She was sort of the classic American success story, a girl from Louisiana who makes it big. And then she has a fall. And we did a cover story about how she essentially had a naked pool party on the top of the Standard Hotel. I will tell you that the interesting thing about that story is that it is as well-researched and fact-checked.
It may be true. I'm not arguing that it isn't.
Page of the New York Times.
I'm not saying it isn't true, but it's certainly lurid.
Well, you know, it's lurid in the same way to find out about Karl Rove and all the devious things that he's been doing. The big distinction here is that the reader who comes to us weekly is coming to find out about the people they care about. The readers who are going to the New York Times or Washington Post are going to those publications to find out those characters and those issues that they care about. What's important, though, from us as journalists, my boss, Janice Mann, she also went to Columbia School of Journalism. We care about the truth and about it being accurate. Now, whether or not people should care about Britney Spears, that's a whole other issue, and that really can be debated. But the issue of journalism and what we're printing and really revealing the truth about the lives of the people that the readers care about, that's of paramount importance to us.
We're talking with Ken Baker, West Coast editor of Us Weekly, as we discuss tabloid journalism and glossy magazine journalism, too. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email we have from Hillary in Kettering, Ohio. You have no idea. It's the great distraction. While our economy withers, we toil away in a foreign land in a frustrating war. I know there will be starlets on drugs, babies being adopted, and fashion faux pas galore. It is mindless escapism. There are a few of us that buy the magazines and swap them around. I will find myself reading at least 4 tabloid magazines a week. There is also an almost inexhaustible supply of tabloid fodder on the internet, including PopSugar.com and PinkIsTheNewBlog.com, and so there's a fan of your trade.
Well, there's a lot of them. I mean, and it's really the industry has really blossomed. You may have seen in the New York Times there's a story 2 days ago that said magazine circulation is down across the board, except for celebrity magazines.
And which are doing quite well. It's what, now about a third of the magazine business?
Yeah, well, we've seen basically magazine circulation. Ours has quadrupled on the newsstand in the last 5 years. You've gone from having 2 weeklies in 2000 to having 6. And it's interesting because I worked at Us Weekly when September 11th happened. And I remember a lot of people were commenting about how, oh, gosh, the end of irony, the end of frivolous entertainment and escapism in our media. Well, within 2 or 3 years, we had gone from 2 weekly celebrity magazines to 8. There's now 6 because 2 couldn't make it. And the circulation has gone from about maybe 2 million to about 6 million total in the category on the newsstand. So it's really interesting, I think, that people, as the world has become more complicated and scarier and dangerous, I think they've gravitated to the escapism because of some sort of need to escape.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Rob. Rob's with us from South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if you could speak to the, the sort of psychological aspect. What is it that draws people? Is it just escapism? I mean, I would like to say that I am somehow above this, but I see it just like anyone else on the internet or wherever.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like I really love bad movies. Is it something like that where people just are inclined to watch a train wreck?
What is the fascination with celebrities, Ken?
Well, I think, I mean, there's sort of a cliche that we tell ourselves in this business, which is that readers come to Us Weekly to see themselves. And I think there's a lot of truth to that because, yeah, they aren't famous pop stars, but they are real people who maybe they're going through a divorce and it might be kind of ugly and nasty. And perhaps there's something comforting in seeing someone who is more beautiful than you or richer, who has really the same human problems as you do. And I think so in a lot of ways, the soap opera that has become the celebrity media just connects with people on a very every man level, every woman level. And I think that that's sort of the strength of what the celebrity magazine and celebrity media is all about.
Thanks very much for the call, Rob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Stay with us. We're going to continue this conversation with Ken Baker, the West Coast editor of Us Weekly, about tabloid journalism. And we'll also talk about the battle over brainy babies and the electronic babysitter. If you're a parent, do you show your kids videos like Baby Einstein? Is your baby any smarter for watching The Wiggles? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stick around. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're continuing our conversation with Ken Baker, and I misidentified him earlier. He's now editorial director of Us Weekly. Congratulations on the promotion.
Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, you were talking about those circulation figures just a moment ago. Clearly, the tabloids get a lot of criticism for what they do, for how they do it, but you're also clearly doing something right.
I think that what we find is that people want to know the real story. And there's this obsession over what's really happening. And if I'm out on the street and someone knows I work for Us Weekly or I'm at a cocktail party, they inevitably, and I'm telling you, it doesn't matter where the cocktail party is, I could be at a state dinner. Mm-hmm. It's going to be someone who comes up and wants to know about Britney Spears. People just have this, almost this need to know what's really happening. And really what's developed is an entire journalism industry of people practicing journalism in order to get to the bottom of things, to get to the facts. And the industry has grown. And obviously there's been an evolution that has happened in the magazine industry where the weeklies have become very immediate and relevant. And you've seen newspapers struggle. And I think that, obviously, I started off in newspapers. A lot of people who work at Us Weekly started off in newspapers. And no one wants to see newspapers go away. And I think that if there's anyone from newspapers listening right now, it's take a look at Us Weekly. Take a look at the magazines and say, what can we learn from these? Not that you necessarily have to abandon city council to go cover Britney Spears going out to a club tonight, but there's a way to present the information and a way to be in connection with your readers that I think newspapers are just lacking right now, and it's really too bad.
Let's talk with Carrie. Carrie with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi, Carrie.
I just wanted to comment. I'm surprised that nobody's saying how disgusting the paparazzi is, that the way that they hound these people to death is part of what's making them be crazy. You know, as a mother, I just want to take Britney Spears and hug her and fix her. And I agree that the paparazzi help make us interested in her, but aren't we what's breaking her?
A response to that, Ken Baker?
Yeah, well, you're not going to find me here on the radio defend paparazzi who are aggressive or do things illegally and abuse or assault people. That's wrong, no matter what profession you're doing. I think that the paparazzi get a bad rap because there have been some really egregious incidents, Diana's death among them. But I have to be honest with you. There's been a lot of days where I've looked at some of these celebrities and I say, why are you living here? You know the paparazzi sit on about four different corners, and you could go away and they're not going to follow you. You could live somewhere else. There seems to be, for the celebrities who are in the media, I'll give you an example. Lindsay Lohan was arrested in Santa Monica for DUI, and they also found cocaine on her.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsay Lohan was photographed probably close to every day for about the last year, okay, whether she went on vacation or she was just going around town. Suddenly, her lawyer told her to go into hiding. For about 2 weeks, we couldn't find Lindsay Lohan. And the lesson there was they can go away and hide when they want to. And I think that your guest before talked about the symbiotic relationship between the press, the paparazzi, and the celebrities. And the truth is, a lot of the celebrities you're seeing, they want to be photographed. Now, no one wants to be assaulted or hounded or harassed. That's horrible. But I think if it's getting to the point where it is driving you crazy, you should step out.
On the other hand, they should be allowed to live where they want to live and to conduct business as usual and go get a cup of coffee or something without the amount of paparazzi. If you and I have to admit that I've been interested lately, and it's a new interest for me, but from reading the tabloids that I've read lately, my overall opinion is, my God, this is disgusting. And if you ever see a picture with a paparazzi in the background, there's so many of them surrounding these people.
Hmm.
You can't conduct a normal life that way. And some of these people are too young to really make the decision, you know, I don't need this attention. I should get out of here. And I really think that the tabloids bear some responsibility and should be more responsible.
I totally agree with you. And, you know, we've definitely had to take a look at ourselves, at Us Weekly, and say, we use these paparazzi's images. Where are these images coming from? How are we acquiring them? And a couple years ago, we agreed. We felt as though there were a couple episodes where some lives were put in danger, frankly, where there were just a little bit too much invasiveness, and we didn't feel right about it. And we instituted some policies internally where we said, look, we will not buy a photograph if we know that someone was endangered in the process of taking it, or if it was taken onto private property. Violating someone's private moment, if they had some expectation of privacy, where if they're walking down a sidewalk, it's fair game. There's the First Amendment is there to protect the public's right to publish things, the press's freedom of the press. But otherwise, you're right. There needs to be some standards put in place, and we did do that.
Just to clarify, those photographers you use, the paparazzi, they're not on staff. They're freelancers.
Yeah, these are all freelance photographers, and your caller's right. There are so many of them. There are probably 10 times more than there were 10 years ago, and that's because people who are now listening to NPR are also buying Us Weekly and consuming these images on websites and blogs, and there is this interest in there, and the more interest there is, the more photographs can be sold, the more photographers there will be out there in the free market to give that supply.
Ken Baker, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Ken Baker is the editorial director of Us Weekly. He joined us from his office in Los Angeles. Brainy Baby's coming up.